This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into another edition of 5-on-3, WFUV's Best If Only Hockey Podcast. I'm Grace McCarron, joined by Tucker Austin and Emma Leonardi today. We've got a lot to talk about in the way of player movement. Obviously, Stanley Cup playoffs wrapped up a few weeks ago, but that doesn't mean there's not hockey to talk about. So we'll dive into everything, some local action as well as around the league. But before we get started, Tucker, why don't you start us off? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. You know, it's been a recovery week from the 4th of July, pretty much this week, I would say. But yeah, a lot going on in the hockey world. A lot of moving parts in this offseason so far. And the thing I'm most excited about and excited to talk about today is the emergence of the offer sheet as a real weapon for front offices. So I'm excited to get into it.
How are you, Emma?
You know, I really can't complain. I feel like I also have been recovering from the 4th. I went home for the 4th, and then I had a really early train Monday night, and I'm not gonna lie, that kind of affected my whole week because I had to be up at 5:30 a.m. and it's just been kind of exhaustion ever since. But also it's the summer, so kind of just vibing just here.
Hey, well, let's get into it. I wanted to start with the Rangers. Obviously, the biggest news coming out of there is the Vincent Trocheck trade, which we knew was probably going to happen at some point, but it finally hit the airwaves. Last week, they traded Vincent Trocheck to the Utah Mammoth for Sean Durzi, Cole Badoon, and a third-round pick. Again, kind of an expected departure. Did not, you know, with the letter that came out a few months ago from Chris Drury, we knew that there was probably not going to be a lot of guys sticking around on this team at the moment, but Emma, why don't you start off? What did you think about this departure and the return?
I feel like, you know, even though the Rangers aren't my team, I feel like Vincent Trocheck, I just think of him when I think of the Rangers. And it is as you said, it's not unexpected because of the whole redoing the whole team type energy, but it is sad. And I feel for it's unfortunate we don't have a true diehard Rangers fan on this podcast right now, because I would love to know their feelings on it, but I can't imagine it's a happy feeling. And it is sad because it's a change for sure. And again, coming after all of these other departures, again, not unexpected, but it is still sad. I do think that they got kind of a decent return on him. I don't hate it, but yeah. More the emotional aspect, I think, for me is what I think about in terms of this.
Yeah, and I'd say, I don't hate the return. It's effectively three players for one, which, I mean, you take that all day. It's a third-round pick to go with the two players. But Sean Durzi is a bruiser. He's a big body, so you don't really lose that sort of fight aspect. Not that Trocheck would get in a lot of fights, but he would throw his weight around. And I agree with you, Emma. I think this was really, it's one of the last bastions of the old breed of this Rangers team. You look back to the whole Trouba fallout, and then Chris Kreider getting shipped out, and then Trocheck is just the next in line. Two of the only guys who are, or I guess three of the only guys who are left from that team are Shesterkin, who is untouchable, Mika Zibanejad, and Alexi Lafreniere. And it seems like the Rangers are pretty okay with just leaving them, but they're changing almost everything else about this team. And I don't think that's the wrong way to approach this. They got into a really bad spot in terms of the locker room, in terms of the team culture. It wasn't a winning one. And now they're just they're continuing to shake things up. And I think after a struggle in the first season with a new bench boss last year, probably led to this as well. Trocheck's Only 32. I figured he might be a little bit older, but yeah, I don't hate this for the Rangers at all. And saying this as a Devils fan, that actually means a lot. I think that this was a really solid move for the Rangers.
I heard from Sophia on this. Obviously, she loves Trocheck, so she was sad to see him go. But the return, I would say, is about as good as you could have asked, considering what happened with Artemi Panarin. And that return was, not maybe what anybody was wanting. This was a pretty good move. It looks like, or in my eyes, this was a pretty good move. They waited and they said, hey, we're not just going to try and ship this guy off for nothing. We're going to try and make something of this. And they did that. They got two promising players out of it and then a pick. It's not the worst thing in the world considering where the Rangers are right now. Couple of other interesting moves for them. They added Pavel Dorofeev for a 7-year, $77 million deal. That's $11 million per year. And then Oliver Bjorkstrand and Marcus Pettersson as well. What did you guys think, and where do you kind of see the Rangers right now? We know they're coming off a really, really disappointing year after another disappointing year. Where does this put them now? Will they be, you hope they're better next year. Will they be competitive next year? Tucker, why don't you start off? What do you think?
I mean, it certainly looks like they should be remotely competitive. There's like it wouldn't take a lot to be above the bar that was set by last season, but they've made enough moves now, and they've brought enough sort of fresh meat into the locker room that I really think that they can kind of turn the page on the past going into this season and look only forward. And that's the best thing for the Rangers right now, is to try and just eliminate thoughts about anything that's happened over the past 3 years. And I wouldn't say act like it didn't happen, but a little bit, yeah. Just kind of act like none of those years happened or mattered, and just move forward. And they have enough fresh faces to do that, I think, and enough fresh faces who are really, really solid. You mentioned Dorofeev. I think you mentioned Bjorkstrand too. Those are both excellent pickups. Dorofeev, you said, is a 7-year deal. The 26-year-old, he's going to be here for a, or he's going to be with the Rangers at least for a very long time. And I mean, he's been playing great hockey recently. So I love this for the Rangers. I love it for the Rangers Devils rivalry, because as long as the Rangers are like bottom of the East, they can't really have any meaningful games against the New Jersey Devils. But I think they're set up for that series to be much, much better this year. And yeah, like just ride, they'll be riding Igor Shesterkin most of the season. I don't know if they, like, in terms of backup goaltenders, I'm not really that like impressed. I feel like if they went another direction than Jonas Korpisalo, they could probably get Shesterkin a little more rest and keep him fresher throughout the course of the season. But Shesterkin's also not a guy who necessarily needs rest. If he's hot, he'll stay hot for a very, very long time. So, Ranger fans, I would say rejoice. This season will be a sort of fresh look at how this new era of the New York Rangers is supposed to be.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with like all of that. It's kind of interesting because you see like the 7-year contract and you're kind of like, oh, so is this season going to be kind of more of like especially like coming off of like getting rid of a lot of like key guys and like getting new members, is this kind of going to be more of like a not like a rebuilding type season, because obviously they've been rebuilding a little bit already with all of these trades, but is it gonna be like getting into like the groove of things? Like how long is that gonna take is kind of my question. How long is it gonna take for like them, like all of these new people to get in the groove of like working together and being on this team, especially coming off of like such a bad year and with like the existing people, like can they get out of like that headspace of the bad year that they've already had? And like or the bad like almost 2 years that they've had. And but then you look at like in the Bjorkstrand one is only a year, so is it kind of like a, obviously you're always hoping for a playoff, but is it kind of like looking to see if this team could like this new group of guys could be like a playoff team. I'm just really interested to see what happens, to be honest. I feel like there's a lot of different routes this could go, but like I don't think that any route is a bad route. So I'm kind of like I'm with Tucker on the like I think Rangers fans can rejoice and expect a better season at least than the past one.
And with the salary cap on its way up, this is going to impact a lot of teams, but I think it also helps the Rangers in this sense where you can have a guy like Bjorkstrand on a one-year deal. And if this team turns out to be like maybe exceed expectations, they should have room in the new salary cap to kind of bring him back for multiple years if they feel the need. But I also think it's like a safe rental. If things don't really work out and they feel like they need to move him, they could probably get good value for him at the trade deadline. So this is it's kind of a hybrid season for the Rangers, I would say, in that sense, where yes, this team has the possibility to play really, really well, but we just kind of need to see it on the ice. And I feel like the front office is sort of in the same place.
Yeah, I was actually going to go off, like, say the same thing. They're kind of in between right now, where Chris Drury's like, he said in January, not a full rebuild, but it's going to look a little different. So when you don't commit to a full rebuild, I feel like we've seen, and across sports, like it takes a little longer because you won't commit to just starting over, basically. And, you know, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals a couple seasons ago. Like, they shouldn't really be starting over when you think about that. But they've also, a lot of those guys are gone now. Some of them have not been performing the same way, but they have pieces, I think. And again, as we said, it's hard to get worse than they have been the past 2 years. It's been, I would say, embarrassingly bad, especially coming off of that great run in 2024. But yeah, they're kind of in a weird in-between spot right now. So we'll see what happens there. But Vincent Trocheck out. We have Dorofeev in. Bjorkstrand, Marcus Pettersson as well. But this is a tough one for me. But let's turn it over to the Island. Islanders don't have a captain right now. And, you know, I would say in Islander land, we saw this coming. Anders Lee, God knows I love him, but he's 36 and he wanted a multi-year deal. Islanders didn't want to give him that. So he's now a member alongside Vincent Trocheck of the Utah Mammoth on a 3-year, $16.2 million deal. Now, I'll start off on this one because this was a tough one. I love Anders Lee. He was a fantastic captain for many, many years in the locker room. I've seen a lot of really bad Islander losses in my time. In the locker room, he took it and he would say, we need to be better. He always took responsibility and would say the hard things. He would stand there. He was never bad to the media or anything. He would always be like, you know, that was not good enough. We need to be better. The feeling is XYZ. No excuses from him. So he'll definitely be missed in that locker room, especially for a team, not going to say like the Rangers, it's kind of like in between right now, but we're kind of not really sure what they're going to be next year. They have one of the great young players in the sport with Matthew Schaefer, but there's a lot of things that they need to be better at. One of those things is they need to get younger. So when the front office made this decision, it's not surprising. Anders Lee is going to be with Utah until he's 39 years old. A lot of 40-year-old hockey players aren't very effective, as, you know, we probably are all aware. So they lose their captain. It's sad. It's, you know, it's a bummer. They couldn't bring a cup while he was there, but he leaves, and he'll be missed. But I would say this was, unfortunately, the right move for the Islanders. The front office had said, you know, it wasn't so much the money as it was the term of the contract. We didn't want to give him more than 1 or 2 years. He wanted 3. Sometimes that's just how it goes. So, yeah, it's sad. I'm going to miss him. Islander Nation's going to miss him, too. The team will miss him. They've already, a lot of them have talked about it online. But, Emma, I'll start with you. What do you think this means for the Islanders? And is there anybody you think should be the next captain, or should they wait to name one?
Okay, I'm going to say, honestly, I'm going to start off with that. I'm going to say wait to name a new captain. I think especially when you have Anders Lee, who I feel like was just such, he just is captain energy. Like, And he was so good at being the captain, and again with the team, but also in the locker room and like with the media, and just being like the go-to, I feel like. I don't think that this was a bad decision. I think that when you get down to like it sucks because when you get down to like the front office would be okay with like 1 to 2 years, but he wants three. It's kind of like, and he's like on the older side. It is like, okay, like can we like it is like it sucks as a fan to like look at it, I feel like, because it's like could there not like be some sort of like compromise type thing? But at the same time, if he's really set on like the 3 years, and he got 3 years, so like that's good for him, but if he's really set on that, then like I don't think at all it's like a bad decision at all, and a bad move at all. But it is sad, as you said, but yeah, I feel like they definitely need to get younger. I feel like they need more people, like closer to Schaefer's age, because I everything I hear about Schaefer is literally him being like the like little brother and like the babysitter for all of them, and like I love him, and I honestly, if he like stayed on the Islanders, I feel like he could be a really great captain if he like once he got older. And that's also why I think that they should wait, because I feel like the right energy, and you can also like provide your opinion on this, because maybe like there's somebody else you think would be a really good captain, but I feel like the best person energy wise who could be captain is Schaefer, but he's too young right now. And I think that the way that they have the team, there are like a couple other guys who are in the right age like range, but I think all together like they do fill that like captain space, so I don't think like naming one of them is really fair to the rest. So yeah, but I'm excited to see him play with Trocheck too. I think that that's going to be interesting. So yeah.
And I think it's the same sentiment for me as well. It's a really deflating loss when you lose a player who's so special to a franchise and to a fan base. But I mean, the contract is interesting. It's a 3-year deal for a 36-year-old player. And yes, Anders Lee is Anders Lee, but how much longer is he going to still be playing like himself? I don't know how much they're going to get out of him in that age 39 season. And I think the Islanders kind of saw the writing on the wall in that sense. Yes, the Islanders, I would say, probably need to get a little bit younger. But at the same time, I would offer that when you have older players on the team, they're going to help a young guy, especially a possible future superstar like Matthew Schaefer. They're going to help his development along. If you have older guys in that room, they're going to show him the ropes and kind of teach him how to go about his business. Instead of just having it be like a bunch of his friends, kind of like what they have going on in San Jose. Yes, they're good over in San Jose, but it also is just like a lot of fun and a lot of power of friendship. I think like if the Islanders want to take Matthew Schaefer's development seriously, I think they keep veterans in that room. But losing Anders Lee is tough. I think they should go after naming a new captain because of the same argument that you used, Emma. Matthew Schaefer could be the captain in the future. But someone needs to kind of bridge the gap between Anders Lee and Matthew Schaefer, and I think that guy could probably be Matt Barzell. I'm not in the Islanders locker room all that much, and I'm not sure what his leadership qualities would be. But I go based off the fact that he's one of the longest tenured, if not the longest tenured Islander. He's been on the island for 10 years, and it kind of seemed like when you were thinking about the New York Islanders while Anders Lee was there, it kind of went Lee and then Barzell. And so for me, it seems like a natural step up for Matt Barzell to kind of take the reins, at least until maybe until the end of his career, if he does retire on the island, and if not, he winds up somewhere else and then kind of hands it off to Matthew Schaefer. But I think Barzell would be a solid pick for sort of that like interim captain, and not even as an interim. I think he would do well as a captain. And it's always valuable to have a captain. You would rather have one than not have one, especially after losing one as special as Anders Lee. You want to try and move on from that and not let it kind of hang over the rest of the season.
I feel like with the like whole like Matt Barzal argument, the thing is that there's also like Bo Horvat, and in my mind, the two of them together is like the perfect captain for the Islanders right now. So that's why I'm like, don't name one of them. Maybe have like obviously you have the option of alternates, but I feel like if you had the two of them working together to fill that captain role instead of just naming one or the other, I feel like honestly it could provide more. Like, and that's just like my opinion, but I feel like again, Bo is like also has a lot of great qualities that could serve as captain.
Yeah, I would say, I think they should name a captain. I agree with you, Tucker. It's always weird to me when teams don't have a captain. It sounds like dumb, but it's always like, we don't really know the dynamic there. And yeah, I think Matthew Schaefer, if he continues on the trajectory that we think he's on, should be the captain. I would give it 2 or 3 more years, probably, maybe more, but at least 2 or 3 more years until he gets the C. I would say Bo Horvat is the guy to bridge the gap between Anders and Schaefer, just because he's been there a long time. He's seen some things. He's another guy in the locker room. He's always talking in the locker room. I love Matt Barzal to death. He's my favorite. You guys know this, but he's less vocal, I feel like, than Horvat, and that's not a dig or anything. It's just how it is. But Horvat has kind of always, in my mind, been second to Anders in like he's going to talk and he's going to be the second guy who's gonna say when the games are bad, like we need to be better. Here's what we did wrong. Here's how we're gonna fix it going forward. So I would say he probably makes the most sense. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they named him captain, but yeah, overall, I think when you and they have some other young players coming up as well. Cal Ritchie was really impressive last year. They have some guys in the AHL who I'm interested in seeing their development. But they do overall, they have a lot of guys on that roster who are a little older, who are maybe on their way, not out the door, but heading that direction. I think you need a captain to bridge the gap between Anders' generation and Schaefer's generation. But that's our farewell to Anders Lee. He was amazing, and I wish him only the best in Utah alongside Trocheck. I'm, as you said, Emma, I thought that was kind of fun. Two New York guys in Utah could be fun. Utah made the playoffs this year, so we'll see what goes on there. That's an interesting team all of a sudden. But we can head to the Devils, who funnily enough, took the Islanders' backup goalie. David Riddick is now a New Jersey Devil. Congratulations, Tucker. I'm a big fan of his. But the bigger story there is goodbye, Jacob Markstrom. And he's a Panther now. And I was wondering, Tucker, what you thought of that. We have not talked about it. I know there's some, not controversy, but whatever you want to call it, around Markstrom last year. Obviously, Florida is in an interesting spot this year. Bad season last year. They're probably going to be miles better this season. What did you think?
Well, it was certainly an interesting experience having Jacob Markstrom in New Jersey. At first, the luster of the initial arrival, it didn't wear off for a long time. He was playing great. The team was winning, and there was really no complaints. But it is such an odd situation in New Jersey with how quickly the fan base will sour towards certain players. I've seen it happen over and over again, where at first a player might take like a small step back, but there might still be room to kind of get back on the horse again. But the fan base will just turn on them, and it just causes a downward spiral. It kind of reminds me of what I saw with Andre Palat when he was with New Jersey, because at first, kind of a unsung hero doing all the dirty work, and fans were pretty okay with his performance. But as time went on, the lack of scoring became very apparent, and people turned on him. And then the little things that he was doing well started to not show up in the game either. So it was kind of a similar situation for Markstrom, I feel like, because he kind of went into a little bit of a slump. Fans started to turn on him, and then things never really turned around. You got a feeling in the building that, like, towards the end of last season, where like Markstrom's in net and everyone in the arena is kind of just not as confident as they normally would be in the result of the game. It was like an infectious feeling. It really was. It's hard to describe exactly how it felt, but it almost felt like you kind of knew the Devils were going to lose. And that's not a feeling that can really exist if you want a team. Like, it's hard for a team to sort of get by that collectively. So they send Markstrom back to the Panthers. I love the return. Evan Rodriguez, yes.
Yes.
The Devils have been looking for someone to shore up the bottom six, and I think Evan Rodriguez will be an excellent third line guy for this Devils team. He doesn't mind playing in the bottom six, and he'll just go to work. And the Devils just need production out of their third and fourth lines, and he'll definitely bring it. Jesper Boqvist is back. He was honestly, I wouldn't necessarily say one of my favorite Devils when he was there in his first stint, but he was definitely a favorite among the fans. I've seen several Twitter and like Instagram handles that were like Jesper Boqvist related, but were Devils fans come back from hibernation like the second he got traded. Ben Steves also comes over in that deal. I like the depth. I like getting three players for Markstrom, especially when it didn't seem like things were going anywhere with Jacob Markstrom as the 1A goaltender. And Dave Rittich is an excellent, excellent add. I don't necessarily think he will back up Jake Allen. I think it'll be more like a tandem goaltender situation where there is no longer an A guy that you rely on in your biggest games. It's kind of just like Rich and Allen, you two work together to figure out how we can get through the season. And they're both like very solid goaltenders working in a role like that. Allen, we know this, has been saying in the locker room postgame for ages that he's just here to kind of always be ready and do a job when the Devils need it. The guy is the ultimate team player. So I think bringing in a guy like Rittich, A, won't threaten Allen at all in terms of like losing his job. And B, will allow the two of them to work off of each other really, really well. So I'm excited about that goaltender pairing. And I don't necessarily think the Devils need to go get like a big name goaltender, although the rumors about Hellebuck have been swirling around again. But overall, I like the Markstrom move. It was kind of its time, you know, like a la when they got rid of Lindy Ruff. It was time. There was no other way that it could go at that point other than just kind of a plateau with Markstrom in that.
Yeah, I feel like I like agree with literally everything you said. Like, I agree with literally everything you said, and you took the words like out of my mouth. I feel like I definitely like want to emphasize the return is great. Like, that's just, like, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that is a crazy return for Jacob Markstrom. And then, yeah, I like the Rittich-Allen, like, tandem goaltending for this season. I know you mentioned the Hellebuck, like, rumors and stuff like that, which obviously would be great if that happened. But I also think that if you're just relying on Rittich and Allen, like, I think it could be at least a decent season. Like, I think that they could do well together.
We also have out of New Jersey a Nico Hischier extension. One captain in New York leaves, another one stays for five more years. Nico Hischier signs a 5-year contract. And then a side note that I learned yesterday, Nico Hischier, big month of July for him, signed his 5-year contract. He goes back to Switzerland, his home country, for part of the summer break, saves a family in a river from, they were apparently in danger, and he helped until the authorities arrived. What a guy. Truly what a guy. Tucker, what do you think of Hischier as a contract-wise and person-wise?
Well, I mean, being the captain that he is, Nico Hischier decided to just kind of play down his role in that whole situation in Switzerland. Exactly. He was saying things like, oh, you know, I was just trying to help. I was like, I couldn't just stand there, you know, I had to kind of get involved a little bit. Other witnesses described Nico Hischier's actions as, quote, heroic, end quote. So who knows what actually happened, but I mean, suffice it to say, all the headlines have said that Nico Hischier saved a family in Switzerland. So, yes, what a guy. Also, what a captain. Exactly what you would expect out of a guy who's wearing the C. And absolutely needed that re-signature to a 5-year deal. Nico Hischier has been a rock for this organization ever since they drafted him. The second they put the C on him, he knew the responsibility of wearing it and knew what he had to do. His goal his entire career has been to bring a cup to New Jersey, and he's certainly not stopping. I think, like, with a new GM in Sonny Mehta, who was able to negotiate this deal. Nico Hischier didn't want to leave, and I think Mehta knew that, but he also knew that he wanted Hischier to be a Devil for the foreseeable future, and that's exactly what this deal does. It just allows you to have that continuity of a captain, something that, like, the Islanders losing Anders Lee will lack going into this season. So that's big. And I love the value on it too. They didn't have to pay him like an exorbitant amount of money, at least compared to some of the other contracts that are flying around right now. And we'll probably get into that later. But this was a super important move for the Devils. I'm glad Sonny Mehta was able to get it done. And shout out Nico Hischier. What's not to love about this guy? He plays an excellent game on the ice. He's an awesome two-way forward. He's a captain of his team in the NHL. And he also does some superhero work on the side.
I love that. He's so, like that just makes sense that he would do that. Like that just...
That's the craziest part, is I'm just not surprised. No, like, anyone else, I'd be like, wow, that's insane. But it was Nico Hischier, and I was like, yeah, that tracks. Yeah.
Not shocked.
His quote after was my favorite part. Oh, we're just glad everyone's safe. Like, okay. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like, it's chill. Literally not about him at all.
He's the best. Now let's move on to the rest of the league. Emma, I did a special section on the rundown just for you. The Washington Capitals have had themselves a very interesting offseason. First of all, the easy one here, Alex Ovechkin back on a 1-year deal, but he has said, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be done after 1 year. And his wife also said maybe 2 years. So that was cool.
Yeah. I feel like, okay, you're saying that you made this section on like for me, but how realistically, how were you not going to talk about this? Even if I wasn't on this show, you have to talk about this. Cause like arguably, even though it's like what is he really going to do this season? We'll see if he'll like be good enough. Sorry. That's sounds really bad, but like it is arguably one of the biggest hockey things that is like things that have happened in the NHL in recent, like the past few weeks, I would say. He's just, I mean, I had no doubts, and I will stand on this. I think I've said this on podcasts. I know that I've said this to like you and Tucker, like individually. I will stand on this, and I have stood on this. I knew he was coming back because there was just no way that he was leaving. First of all, when he is pretty close to 1,000 goals, and then also, the Caps almost made the postseason, and like low-key, I think that if they made it, they would have done well, because I think that some of the teams that made it, like, I think that they could have performed better in like in the playoffs than like some of the teams that made it, but that's neither here nor there. But I like looking at it from his perspective, I don't like, first of all, I don't blame him at all. Second of all, I would also want to stay for like a little while longer, even just a year. I personally think that like after this next year, it gets iffy. Like that's when I'm not as sure, because I was confident that he was going to come back for this coming season. But after that, I do think it's iffy, because he is getting up there in age. We were talking earlier about 40-year-old players, and he is 40. He also like, every once in a while, you know, he'll have a goal and it'll be a good goal. But other than that, he literally does nothing. He stands there and watches. And I love him to death, but at some point you need to like kind of move on from that. And at some point he needs to just be done. So I think it entirely depends on what happens this season. Because I think two things. I think if they make the playoffs, but they don't like win the cup, but they're close enough to winning the cup that they could have done it, I think he'll stay another year. If they don't make the playoffs, iffy, kind of like, eh, I don't really see him staying, especially if there's like any potential, like I'm putting padding in there for like injury stuff, and like age. But if they were to win the Stanley Cup this coming season, which I do think, this is not me being delusional, I do think that they have a good chance at it. Like, I think that they have a good shot. Don't make that face, Grace. Don't make that face.
I make that face about everybody who's not like
I know.
the Hurricanes.
I know. But I feel like they have a good shot at it. I don't necessarily, I'm not confident in them like getting there, but I do feel confident in like how I feel like the season is not going to be bad. But if they were to win it, I think he would retire. And some people might argue, well, if they were to win it, he'd try to go for like back to back because that's just like who he is. But I think if they were to win it, I think he would just call it and be like, yeah, that's good enough. I'm leaving on a high note. It's done. I mean, I think that the deal was pretty good. I honestly like the hometown discount and like for him, like for it being him, I think that it was a good deal for both sides. I like the acquisitions. Boone Jenner, big fan. However, he did take number 22, and that we just like traded away or he left. I'm gonna have to like look that up again, but Brandon Duhame just left and like he was number 22. And when you talk about like locker room like energy and you talk about captain energy, I always saw like I know everybody says Tom Wilson, Tom Wilson. I personally think that Tom Wilson would not be a good captain. And I actually thought that like the best captain options for the Capitals were John Carlson, who went to Anaheim and is now in Tampa. And then Brandon Duhame, and they're both gone. So I'm like, okay, so it's literally just after Ovechkin leaves, it's literally just Tom Wilson. That's gonna be our captain. So that's kind of like hard for me to deal with. So that's kind of overshadowed, I think, Boone's like arrival. I do like the other Alex's contract. I like it. But I think that it, like, I don't know. It is like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. I'm not gonna lie. But I do like it. Like, I like him on the team. I like the prospects of that, and I'm hoping that that doesn't like, come back to bite me for like liking that. And Kyrou, love it. That was great. I saw that and I was like, yes. That I feel like we're making good moves. I like this. And I feel like honestly, the entire offseason, like they have made decent moves. They have made decent deals. And like from, Caps fans in the comments on Instagram and Twitter, it seems like everybody else is pretty happy too. So, which with this organization, I do feel like sometimes is not common. So feeling good. Feeling good. That was a long-winded way for me to say I'm feeling good about this upcoming season.
I definitely think there's reason to. I mean, the Caps did miss the playoffs last year, but these are pretty aggressive off-season moves for a team with, I mean, that's had an aging core for some time, mostly around Alex Ovechkin. But I mean, like you said, he's back for a 1-year deal, and he said to the media multiple times he has no idea if it's going to be his last year. He could play another one after that. So Ovechkin's not really sure if he's done yet. Love the Boone Jenner acquisition, Jordan Kyrou as well. But I think the big ticket clearly to me is Alex Tuch. I was shocked when the Sabres decided to sign and trade him after the season that they had, like make the playoffs for the first time in 1,000 years and win a playoff series. Like that, how do you not keep that group together? But Instead, they sign Alex Tuch to an 8-year deal and then trade him to the Capitals. And I think that is a win all day for Washington. Alex Tuch is an excellent player. And I like the way you described him, Emma, as the other Alex, because he's definitely going to be sort of that guy who is there once Ovechkin does finally decide to hang him up. And then Caps fans don't have to not have an Alex. So that was a good move in that regard. But I think overall, the Capitals are in a really good position. They didn't have a necessarily awful season last year. It was just very hard to make the playoffs in the East. So, I mean, and the team that made the Cup final in the Western Conference, the Golden Knights, had fewer points in the regular season than the Islanders and the Devils. And neither of those teams made the playoffs. So the East was just really bunched up last year. So I think the Caps made the moves that they needed to make so far. There's still some offseason left and they could still move some pieces around. But I think so far they're definitely positioning themselves to have a much better season next year and probably make a minor run in the playoffs.
Yeah, I will say my like one complaint about the trades I feel like has been we need to beef up our defense, and all of these people are forwards, and like it's fine because we do tend to like I feel like we tend to be more offensive like in the past, but and we have my favorite Jacob Chychrun, who literally could like in and of himself be like a defensive unit, but you can't just rely on like a few players. Like you have to have like a beefy defense, I feel like, and just with like them focusing so much on offense, it does kind of worry. That worries me. So that would be my only complaint, and that would be my only like thing to like look out for this season is like are we gonna fall because we don't have like a beefier defense.
Yeah, definitely some interesting moves in a very tough East. We talked about how hard it was this past season, and that was when the Panthers were decimated by injuries. I'm wondering what's going to go on this season when the Panthers are healthy and theoretically back to normal, and now they have Brady Tkachuk too. But I would say one of the bigger things going on in the NHL the past week or so, the Philadelphia Flyers with their offer sheet to Leo Carlson, 5 years, $90 million, so 18 per year. Ducks had until I believe it was today to match. They matched yesterday. So Leo Carlson will be returning to Anaheim as the highest paid NHL player. Straight up, Leo Carlson, great player, very important to that Ducks team. And he's 21 years old, which is great. He should theoretically only be getting better. But is he worth 18 million per year? Tucker, do you want to go first?
I mean, sure, that's kind of the biggest question, because the Ducks certainly wanted to bring him back as a franchise center. Who wouldn't want to bring a guy like that back, especially standing at 6'3"? You kind of have to like remind yourself continually that Leo Carlson is a, I would say, an oversized center, maybe, because a lot of the centers in the league now are a lot smaller and a lot faster. And Leo Carlson's not slow by any means, but he's a big body and he uses that body to his advantage. And the way he's been playing, he hasn't had a point per game season yet, but the elements of a dominant two-way center are definitely there. So I think there is value in him. Is he the highest paid player in the NHL? I don't think so. So for me, that's why I think this had nothing to do with his actual player value or the value that the Flyers think he has. I think this has everything to do with the fact that Cutter Gauthier is on the Ducks. He led the team in scoring last year and is now being outpaced in salary by Leo Carlson. So when it comes around that the Ducks are going to have to pay Cutter Gauthier, what the Flyers have now done is forced the Ducks to take an $18 million cap hit year over year on Carlson's contract. That's going to force them to either pay only Carlson and Gauthier or to let Gauthier walk and try to put people around Carlson. And this, I feel like it was less about screwing over the Ducks as it was about screwing over Gauthier. Because if you're Daniel Briere in that front office, you offer sheet Leo Carlson for the highest paid contract in the entire league, and then the Ducks take it. Now you look at Gauthier and say, "Good luck getting paid, buddy." And that's really all that it seems like to me. And especially the way the contract is structured, it's a 5-year contract, but next year his salary is going to be $850,000 with an $18 million signing bonus. And year over year, I think roughly 80 million of the 90 is signing bonuses. So that's money that they have to front at the start of every season while he's in Anaheim until 2031. And it's an immediate cap hit. That money is no longer there for them to work with. It puts the Ducks in a really, really tough spot. But I mean, if you're Anaheim, this was the obvious move. You can't let Philly sort of scalp this guy off of you, especially with the kind of upside that he's been showing. So I admire the Ducks for having the sort of gall to stand up to the Flyers and to sign Carlson, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Gauthier comes asking for money.
Yeah, I just, it's just so hard. I feel like I is any player worth like it comes to a point.
He's
It comes
making
to a
more
point.
than the Carillionaire.
Okay, yeah, but it's just like I don't know. I agree with you that I admire the Ducks for not being like strong-armed by Philly, but it is also like at a certain point. And I don't know how much of this was like also pride, because like when you're being strong-armed, like you obviously want to, especially when you have these two like really like great players, like you want to keep both of them anyway. But it's so it like is hard when you're being strong-armed to like make that like I'm not gonna say smart move, because this could be a really smart move, like move for the Ducks. But it's just like I don't know. Like it makes me wary. It makes me very wary, and it makes me like very interested to see if this does like pan out well, and this does like they do profit off of it. Obviously not monetarily, but with how their season goes. I'm just very interested to see what happens.
I think the Flyers were smarter to make the offer sheet in the first place, but I also think like the Ducks had two choices, and they made the right choice. Like a guy as talented as Leo Carlson, with as much of his career ahead of him as he has, there's just no way you can let him walk. You can't. No matter how much money they threw at him, in the offer sheet, and to be honest, how blatant it was that they were just trying to make a deal that the Ducks couldn't match. But like the Ducks kind of said, like in terms of the Ducks' future, they kind of said, "Well, our future has just been decided for us by another team, so like we're not just gonna like let him walk and then start over from square one." Like you get a guy like Carlson, you got to hold on to him. I think he may well be worth the $18 million a year. It depends how he plays over the next 2 years, but he's definitely been trending in the right direction. And I think that this will create even more beef between these two teams. I wouldn't be surprised when the Ducks match up with the Flyers if gloves start dropping left and right. I think these two organizations are going to be seriously at odds going forward. And now, thinking about it a little bit more, Cutter Gauthier gets put in an interesting spot here, because what the Flyers are trying to do is sort of tap into that same attitude that Gauthier had towards the Flyers, but make it towards the Ducks. But Gauthier has the power within himself to just realize what Philly is doing and help the Ducks by not asking for like more money than Carlson is making. Like he can easily flip this whole gambit on Philly's head by just being a like more of a team player than he was when he got drafted by the Flyers. So yeah, I mean it'll be very interesting. But I look at what offer sheets have become. Daniel Briere fired a shot at the Ducks with this offer sheet, and Sonny Mehta did a similar thing, much more low profile, with the Utah Mammoth, who were also forced to sign a center that the Devils offer sheeted, to the point where now Utah has 8 centers on their roster. So they kind of got strong armed in that scenario. If I'm Utah, I probably let him walk on the offer sheet and take the draft pick. So I think we'll see way more of this, and with high profile players like Leo Carlson going forward. I think NHL GMs have finally figured out how to use offer sheets effectively when looking at other teams' salary caps and future payments that need to be made.
My biggest thing with this, it's not really about Leo Carlson to me. Like, we talked about Cutter Gauthier. They have to pay him at some point. You also have Beckett Seneca, who was just had a great rookie season, and Jackson Lacombe, that team is so young. Like, there's going to be hard decisions that have to be made because so much of their cap space is now just going to be Leo Carlson, which I think this was absolutely the right call. Like, if they had been like, you know, no, the Flyers can have him, we're not going to match, that would have just been a really bad look for that front office, because they just had, they're on the way up, the Ducks. Like, they just had a good season. They have a lot of young guys who are really, really good. You know, you don't want to blow it all up by getting rid of the center you drafted number 2 overall 3 years ago, who's been great. Like, you don't want to blow that all up. It's a lot of money, but I think it was the right call. It's just, it puts them in a weird spot now when the time comes around to pay some of these other guys. And I'm interested to see how that works for them, but they had to do this. So,
yeah, I have one more thing on offer sheets too. This situation between Philly and Anaheim, I think, paints the possible biggest issue with offer sheets, is that teams in larger markets are going to be able to foot this kind of money. And so if there's a stud on a small market team that is trying to manage its payroll a little more like finely than some of these larger market teams, they're just going to be able to throw $18 million a year, or throw the largest AAV contract in the NHL at a star, and like say, here, go try and match it with your like just less revenue in general. So it'll be interesting to see how that works going forward. The Ducks survived this one, but I think the first time a small market team actually can't match the offer sheet and they lose a star to a big market team, I think those questions are going to start being asked.
Yeah, for sure. One last topic to end us off. This one's kind of a bummer. Connor Bedard had left shoulder surgery, and he, starting from this week, he had the surgery. Emma is not happy about this. He'll be out 4 months, which that puts us in November, probably takes him out for the entire first month of the regular season, which starts with the 84-game schedule now, starts in late September. So give it maybe a little smidge over a month for the Blackhawks to be without their star. Emma, do you want to speak on this one first?
I mean, that's literally my husband. Like, what do you mean? Like, I'm devastated for him too, because it's like, it obviously is bad for the Blackhawks as well. Duh. But I feel so bad for him. Like, first a right shoulder, now a left shoulder. Like, this is just like ridiculous. And like, I saw some like things about people like questioning if it was like a genetic thing, if it was like, I don't know, like if he was more like predisposed to like shoulder injuries because of something genetic. I think it's just bad luck, and I feel really bad for him. And I mean, it also sucks because like you're looking at like you have some like younger players too now on the Blackhawks, and like it was looking like before like news of this broke, it was looking like they could be like a decent team this season. And I feel like having Bedard out, not only for a month of the actual season, but also like you're not able to train him the rest of the summer. And he has to recover from this now. And even though he came back like stronger after his right shoulder injury, I still like it just it's just sad. Like it's just sad. And you're right. Like ending off on a bummer. It's literally just sad. I think that this has the potential to like really, I mean, obviously it's gonna really impact the beginning of their season, but I think it has a potent like the potential to really impact the entire season. I think it'll be interesting to see, first of all, what they can do without him in that first month, and then also if they don't do well without him, if they can bounce back after he comes back. It's just gonna be really like kind of wait and see type thing. I just don't have high hopes, and that's why it's really depressing. And also because like again, him, like I feel bad. I feel bad.
If I have learned anything from the New Jersey Devils, it's that the first month of the season
Doesn't
has
matter.
little to no impact on the rest of the season. Yes, if the Blackhawks win like maybe five games in the first month or something, if they have like an awful start, yeah, that'll put them in a hole. But missing the first month of the season is probably the best month that Bedard could possibly miss with this injury. And I think it's funny that you mentioned that that whole speculation about the shoulder injuries and being sort of predisposed to it. I think we should get Bedard and Jack Hughes cross-checked against each other for a genetic match because it seems like the both of them have serious issues trying to keep their shoulders healthy. It is going to be tough though, because like yeah, you mentioned the injured right shoulder. Now he's had surgery on his left. He didn't have surgery on the right, but you know that's got to be in his head when he's playing the game. It is that just like kind of both of his shoulders have been injured at different times, and kind of every time you see him crash into the boards, you're going to be nervous that something has happened. It feels very similar to kind of watching Jack Hughes crash into the boards. For me, the biggest worry I would have about this, if I were a Blackhawks fan, would be like, can Bedard ever stay healthy for a full year? I mean, he's been injured at least once in the last two seasons that he's played in, including that fractured jaw, which fractured jaw, I'll give it to you, is a complete like kind of freak accident. There's not really much you can do about it. But the question starts to creep into your head, like, is Bedard actually injury prone? Is this going to be his career? You know, he was touted as the next Connor McDavid, but if he just gets banged up every single season, he's never going to amount to the expectations that everyone had for him. He just needs to find a way to stay healthy. And he took a huge step forward last season in terms of like skating speed and awareness. His passing got much better, and he continued to score the puck. He needs to stay healthy. He's got the devil's bug. Whatever it is, Bedard definitely has it.
Well, and we also like need to remember that his contract ended with this past season with the
Yeah, they're in
Blackhawks,
negotiations.
and they're still yeah. We still like don't even know. Like he's an RFA. Like and like, I don't see like I saw arguments that like you were saying, Tucker, how like how do they know that this isn't like going to keep happening? And how can you like have confidence when it has already happened so much and you've been in the league 3 years? But I don't see a way that Chicago doesn't like they don't come to some sort of agreement, even if it's like more of a short-term thing, just to see if he can come back from this. Because if he can come back from this and like stay healthy, then it would be a shame to like let him go in that like go to a different team in that sort of situation. But I'm really interested to see what his contract ends up like being with all this happening.
I don't think this is immediately catastrophic for them. I think it's you have to wait and see because we know where the Blackhawks are. Like they're not gonna, I don't think they're gonna be contending for a Stanley Cup this year. But they really the biggest thing should just be how do you keep him healthy if you need, if that's something they need to think about, but he's so young, and when he has been there, he's been really good. So I don't think you just let him, risk him leaving in a couple of years on a short-term deal. I don't think that's the right move either, because then, like, what are the Blackhawks really doing? But I don't know. I'm kind of more willing to see, like, this could just be a 1 month thing, and then he's fine. Like, he seemed okay after he came back from the other shoulder thing in February, but we'll have to see where it goes. But this is going to be our last episode of 5 on 3 until September. It's time for our summer break. We had the Stanley Cup playoffs. We had, free agency. And I mean, it's still going on, but we had some big things happen. We had some trades, and now we need a little rest. So thank you all for listening to 5 on 3 this season. We will chat again in September when everything comes back. It's not too far away, just a couple of months, but we will see you guys then. Thanks for listening to 5 on 3.